Good morning. It's time for the Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour with the Herzog Law Firm.
Will you still need me? Will you still feed me when I'm 64?
Good morning. This is Debbie Verney. I'm from the Herzog Law Firm, and Kim Hantz will be joining us in a little bit. She's having some technical difficulties on her end. I'm going to be here with Kim for the next hour to talk to you about estate planning, state administration, and Medicaid planning. You could be the first caller today at 518-476-5900. That's 518-476-5900. We also are going to have some representatives from the Alzheimer's Association that are going to be with us the second half hour, because today is the big kickoff walk, right? Today is the first walk for the Alzheimer's Association in Latham. There's going to be several of our people there. We're going to have a table, and we'll also have several people walking. And then next week is the Schenectady walk, which is the walk that I'm going to do. How about you, Ben? You want to come join us in Schenectady?
Sure, why not? Absolutely. why would I want to join you guys and walk? Come on.
So it's a great organization, and every year the Herzog Law Firm partners with the Alzheimer's Association to help support the walks, because it's a very, very serious disease, obviously, and it's something that we're always working to get a cure for, right? So, again, give me a call at 518-476-5900. That's 518-476-5900. I had a couple of interesting situations this week, and actually one of my clients, when I was talking to him, he said, you know, you should really tell people about this on the radio. And I went, okay. They have a situation where when they did their documents, they only named each other. He and his wife named each other. They didn't name any backups, so they don't have a backup on their healthcare proxy or their power of attorney or anything, because, you know, you think nothing's ever going to go wrong, right? And fortunately, she had an accident, and she fell down the stairs. She ended up breaking both of her hip joints and Ouch. Fracturing her pelvis. Yeah.
Oh, that's awful.
So she's in a nursing home now in rehab, and he said, well, do I need to redo my documents? And I said, well, you guys should have thought about putting someone on as backup. And when we talk about that, we talk about the fact that a lot of people don't have a deep bench, right? They don't have people that they can name as a backup. And it's difficult, because I start talking to people and I'm like, okay, so you've got each other. What about the kids? Oh, well, the kids are minors, so we can't name the kids. What about brothers, sisters, nieces, nephews, aunts, uncles? And a lot of people don't have people. And whenever you're looking also to say you do have minor kids, who are you going to name as trustee for your kids? Who are you going to name as guardian? These are all things that people really need to think about when they're doing their documents. And people are shocked when I say, okay, and who's going to be your next person? Well, we don't have anybody. So talk to people and make sure that the person you're going to appoint, number one, will follow your direction, meaning if you want to name somebody as your healthcare proxy, make sure that it's someone that will actually follow your wishes for your healthcare proxy, and make sure that it's someone, if you're going to name them as your power of attorney, that is good with finances. It's not an easy thing to do to find people that you trust. That was basically his situation, and so she's stuck in a nursing home, and she's doing rehab, and they're obviously having issues, because I know a lot of the nursing homes are understaffed, and she's trying to do physical therapy, but it's very difficult for her to do physical therapy right now because of her situation. So you need to understand that with Medicare is only going to pay for the first 20 days in full, and then it's only going to pay for like 80% for the next 80 days, right? So you need to make sure that you're rehabbing and participating in rehab, or they will cancel your rehab, and then you're going to be private pay.
Debbie?
So, yes?
We have our first caller. It's Kim in the hinterlands. Kim, are you on the phone?
Good morning.
Good morning, Kim.
Technical glitches, you know. I kept saying, so good morning. And I was listening to you, Debbie, and I'm thinking to myself, like, this is great. But, you know, with the addition of having someone like an advocate, like a care manager like myself, so Tuesday we're actually having a care planning meeting regarding this individual. Because a lot of times in a lot of these situations, particularly when you've got somebody who's like, they're not participating in rehab or, you know, they've plateaued or things like that. Like, there are a lot of things that we can do to kind of push, particularly the rehabs, to look at other ways of providing services so that that individual can stay and continue to get rehab. I mean, obviously, if somebody's plateaued or somebody is maxed out what they can do, but certainly in this circumstance where you've got somebody that's got, you know, the significant injury that she has, it's going to take a little bit longer. So we want to make sure we're maximizing that benefit that she's got, because, you know, once nursing homes are tough, yes, but once you go home and you're having to navigate all of the obstacles and barriers that are at home, it can be even a little more challenging. So we want to make sure we set her up for success and not, you know, failure again.
And that's the benefit of working with our firm. I mean, I've been working with this couple for years, and it was funny because he said to me, he goes, "Do you remember me?" And I'm like, "Oh yeah, you're one of my favorite couples." So it's difficult because they have some underlying conditions too. He's legally blind and she's blind. So that makes it even more difficult, especially in a nursing home situation, to be able to get care.
Right. And so often you've got circumstances where, you know, a facility is saying in order for someone to return home, they need 24-hour care. And you really have to sort of identify, what does that mean? You know, 24-hour care doesn't necessarily mean a body in the house 24 hours a day. There are lots of ways that we can provide 24-hour care with assistive technology and, you know, and home care. And, you know, there's all different avenues that can be set up for individuals so that they can return home and be safe. That's a big thing.
It is. It's a huge situation that we want to plan for, and it's great that we have you to be able to help them navigate it and basically represent them with the nursing homes too, because it's difficult. We can do all the documents and we can get everybody prepared for situations, but on the back end, it's very difficult for us to step in and do it, whereas you have the knowledge to be able to help them kind of navigate that end of it.
Right. And to, you know, I always laugh when I say that, you know, and I love to color outside the lines, right? That's one of my strengths. It's looking at all of the other things that are out there and available and sort of tapping lots of different resources. I mean, yesterday I was working with two colleagues. You know, when we all have difficult situations, we have sort of our group that we reach out to and say, this is what I was presented with, and what do you guys think? And am I missing something here? Is there something else that, you know, I'm not thinking about? And so one of my colleagues, Maria, reached out and said she had a phone call from a gentleman whose wife was at one of the local hospitals and then went into rehab. And the rehab is basically telling him right now that in order for her to return home, she needs 24-hour care, and gave him a list. So this is a discharge planner at the rehab who, you know, from a discharge planning perspective, they should really be sitting down with the clients and kind of explaining to them what services are out there, explaining to them what the actual, because, you know, as we were talking, he really couldn't even articulate what his wife needed because mm-hmm. he hadn't been told by the rehab. So even by calling this list, which if you get somebody that answers the phone, great. More than likely you'll get, you know, an answer, and the first answer is going to be, well, we don't have staff, because we're in one of the greatest staffing shortage crises I've ever seen in my 30 plus years of doing senior care and or elder care. And but then he's got to explain exactly what her needs are. So does she need a companion agency? Does she need a licensed home care agency? Does she need a personal care aide versus a home health aide versus, you know, does she have a skilled need where, you know, a referral for a nurse needs to come in? You know, there's so many questions that are going to be asked. So, you know, for example, for the first couple you were talking about, our blind couple, you know, that's the advantage of me being able to sit in on the care planning meeting on Tuesday, is to be able to ask all these questions. You know, well, what are her technical needs? You know, so often in our aging in place seminar, one of the things that I talk about is what are your needs with your activities of daily living? You know, the bathing, dressing, toileting, transferring, grooming, and ambulating, right? And there's a big difference between hands-on care and, you know, standby contact guard care. So we really want to understand how much a person actually needs versus are they doing really well with just some verbal cues, because maybe they've got some memory issues that prevent them from really remembering how all of the steps that are involved in getting up out of a chair with a walker safely, because the walker's new, right? So do they just need somebody who's there reminding them each of the steps, or do they need somebody there who's providing hands-on assistance with helping them actually get up, you know, and really positioning them and walking with them hands-on to make sure that they're safe. So there's a big distinguishment of what services actually are needed. And we're not so good at that right now. You know, people don't really understand, and a lot of folks don't realize they have the right to ask questions, right? So often they're just told, you need 24-hour care, and if you don't get it, we're going to call adult services, or, you know. And that's horrible. It's a horrible thing to do to our, you know, our elders, because it's scary. It's scary, number one, to have somebody in a facility where you don't have control of what's happening and you don't really know. And then it's scary to think about what's going to happen when that person comes home, because obviously they've already had one accident, right? That's what's landed them in the hospital and then a rehab stay. So how do we prevent that from happening again? So another reason why people really, you know, you were talking about advanced directives earlier, and, you know, when you're talking to your folks, it's not just choosing a person, but it's actually having the conversation with them what you want, what your wishes are, and to be very, very explicit about your wishes, because you're going to expect that person to follow through with what you want in the event that you can no longer speak for yourself. So it's really important to have all of that done and written and explained and talked about. And I think that's the thing we see that happens in a lot of circumstances, right? They do their documents and they kind of tuck them in a file never to be seen again until there's a problem.
True, or they do their own documents. I've had a whole run of people that did their own documents. I had a daughter, well, actually, she's a stepdaughter that came in with the will, and I said, but you're a beneficiary and you're the witness on the will. And she's like, well, I went over to the house one day and he just asked me to sign it again. You know, he never told me what it was. I said, well, you basically just voided the gift to yourself, because you can't be a witness to the will and actually be a beneficiary underneath the will. And because she was a stepdaughter, if the will was null and void, right, she's still not going to take. So it's kind of a lose-lose situation. And she was like, oh. And then I've had people come in that, same thing with healthcare proxies, right? I'm like, you can't be a witness to the healthcare proxy that appoints you. You can't be a witness to the power of attorney that appoints you. So that's why when you come to a law firm, and we're preparing your documents and we witness your documents, that's obviously not going to be an issue because we provide the witnesses, right? The attorney and someone from our office witnesses the documents, so that there's not an issue down the line where people are saying, oh, it was undue influence and, you know, they made them sign this and stuff like that. And whenever you're doing stuff online, I mean, I think that I'm pretty good at doing things online, and I've looked at some of these online documents, and it's very, very difficult to understand them, even though I kind of have a legal knowledge. And you have to make sure that these documents are New York State documents. They just redid the power of attorney in June. And a lot of the old powers of attorney are still out there, the ones that were prior to June of this year. And if you go online and you download those and you do them, guess what? They're not valid.
Which is really hard. And, you know, as circumstances change, as you and I have, you know, worked together on a couple of really tough cases as of late. And Jay Marie is, I mean, you know, we're flooded with guardianships right now. And not that a guardianship is ever easy, but really, really tough circumstances and situations where, you know, there's a lot of, you know, as we call it, dirty laundry being, you know, and you want to avoid that. It's so traumatic. It's so traumatic for anyone to go through this. And it's heartbreaking. You know, it's heartbreaking to listen to people's stories and talk about, you know, ultimately at the end of the day, they want to do right by their person. But sometimes the way the law is written, it doesn't allow them to do that, you know, and because documents weren't done soon enough or, you know, an unexpected happened, just, you know, like the married couple we have that we were working up here, that the wife got hospitalized, the husband passed away, and because of her dementia diagnosis, it prevented really from us being able to follow his wishes because she was not able to change her documents, right? And
right,
power of attorney, you can't change somebody's healthcare proxy or the way things are. So you really, you know, again, when you're doing them, you have to revisit every few years to make sure that they still kind of stand where you want them to be. Because right now there are people involved in that situation that don't know the wife, that the husband, you know, vehemently didn't want involved in making decisions for her, and it's been put in their lap. You know, from what I understand now, because we really haven't been involved, but, you know, now the hospital is taking guardianship for her, right? Because apparently the family is not making decisions on her behalf. So it can get really tricky. And so this woman's now been in the hospital for close to 3 months, Deb?
Yeah.
I think it has to have been that long. And nobody should be in a hospital setting for that long if it's, is not a that's not medically necessary.
No, definitely not. And, you know, we're talking about the extremes here, and I guess we really need to kind of scale it back and talk about just basic information. I did a presentation this week to a group, and when I was just talking about the healthcare proxy, I said, if you don't have a healthcare proxy, they're going to look to your next of kin to make your decisions, right? So what if you're estranged from your next of kin, right? So you don't get along with your parents or whatever. You're in a relationship with someone, or you've been in a committed relationship with someone for a long time, and all of a sudden you're in the hospital. They're going to look to your next of kin to make your decisions for you. They're not going to look to your significant other unless you have documents, right? So you need to make sure, especially if you're in one of those situations, right, where you want someone other than your next of kin to make your healthcare decisions, that you name them. We see issues like this a lot with second marriages, right? So the second marriage, there's no documents. The new husband says, give her everything that you've got. And the kids are like, no, mom would not want to be this way. Mom wouldn't want to be on a feeding tube. So who are they going to look to, right? And in New York State, if you cannot get a consensus, right? If people are duking it out in the lobby, which I guess you really can't do anymore because of COVID, then they can do it by committee. So So do you want people that don't even know you to make your healthcare decisions? It's just very difficult.
Right. So bottom line, do your documents, do them with a professional that can really guide you through the process and make sure all of the I's are dotted and T's are crossed and everything that you want done, as opposed to printing something off the internet.
That's true. Printing something off the internet doesn't work.
Right. And then have the conversation. Like, that's another super important piece of this. That yesterday I was at the Saratoga Senior Center, and they had a panel of so it was about, you know, palliative care, and palliative care is a big mystery to people. And Saratoga Hospital really is sort of innovating a very creative program for folks to help with the reduction of readmissions. And really the focus is because we all know that people do much better outside of, you know, an institutional environment, particularly a hospital setting. So it was really nice to see how trying to make that shift to being more proactive and really being geared towards having a plan in place so that, you know, if the worst case scenario happens, you don't, you know, you have an idea of what's out there and what you want. You know, it's the end of September, which is hard to believe, and starting Saturday of next week, open enrollment starts with Medicare. So from now until the middle of December, I think, December 7th, maybe, the open enrollment for Medicare. And one of the big things that I push with everyone I meet with is you really should be reviewing your Medicare plan every year, too, because that's sort of part of your, you know, your aging well plan, is making sure that you have the right insurance. And of course, Medicare is your health insurance, so you want to make sure that it's meeting the goals that you want. And there are so many Medicare plans out there right now that it's really important to sit with somebody who's a certified health insurance counselor and can really review with you what your current plan covers, and then look at what other plans are out there that would also be eligible for and meet your needs. Because when you're 65 and choosing a Medicare plan, your needs are much different than they are when you're, you know, 75, 80, 85, of course. So you want to make sure that each plan is meeting whatever your options and choices are. And so many plans now are, you know, they offer lots of neat things like silver sneakers. You know, you can go and have workout classes, or you can have acupuncture, or you can have lots of preventative services. So if that's something that's important to you, you know, want to check and see if the Medicare plan you're looking at or have incorporates that. A lot of the Medicare plans now don't require a 3-day hospitalization in order to qualify for rehab if you have an incident. So that's something important to really understand as well, because that can be a big hang-up for people. Because as we know, a lot of times when there's an accident, you might go to the hospital, but you might just be there under observation status. And that would automatically disqualify you from being eligible for rehab and your Medicare covering it, because you didn't have a three-day inpatient stay. So and during COVID, that rule was sort of bumped out. But now that we're no longer under a state of emergency, that rule has been popped back in, that you're supposed to have a three-day, you know, inpatient stay in order for your Medicare to cover it, if that's, you know, the terms of your Medicare plan. So it's really important to understand what it is and what it covers.
Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you, but speaking of which changes, community Medicaid. Originally, we were telling people that January 1st, 2022 was the drop-dead date to get everything in place and apply for community Medicaid, and now that's kind of up in the air, right? We've got notification they may kick it out to July, right?
Well, we've heard it's going to at least be June because of still receiving federal funding. And the other reason is Department of Health has just not been able to get the guidelines out as to what all of the new language means. So I think it's official, if I'm not mistaken, but I think it's official that it's at least going to be June of next year before it's official. So, again, there's a little more time to plan, but that doesn't mean people should put things off, right?
Exactly. It just gives you a little bit of wiggle room. We were really pushing to get things done for people so that they could get their assets transferred and apply for community Medicaid before January 1st. And what that meant was getting people qualified because there was going to be, you know, the look back starting as of January. So now June. So they've given us maybe a 6-month reprieve.
Yeah, which is good. And, you know, if anybody wants to call in and ask some questions, this is a live call-in show. And you can call in at 518-476-5900. Again, 518-476-5900. Deb and I are happy to answer questions. One of the other big things that's happening today is sort of the kickoff to our walk season, Walk to End Alzheimer's. And so in our second half, we'll have two guests from the association joining us to talk about walk, but also talk about sort of what walk benefits. So we're going to have Lindsay Stanislawski, who's the program manager from up north, join us as well. So if folks have questions about the different services from the Alzheimer's Association or walks. Of course, Herzog, part of our 75th anniversary celebration was we've always supported and been sponsors and had teams, but now we've sort of increased our sponsorship and really are focused on having clients and other community partners join us and really help us try to create a world without Alzheimer's. So we'd love to have people join us in that.
And so they're going to be calling in the second half hour. But again, if you have questions, you're welcome to give us a call at 518-476-5900. That's 518-476-5900. We'd be happy to answer your questions.
And we're coming up to the bottom of the hour, so we're going to take our break right here. We'll be right back with the second half of the Herzog Law Firm's Estate Medicaid Planning Hour coming up right after this.
You've been listening to the Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour with the Herzog Law Firm. Join us every week to learn more about protecting the assets you've worked hard for, options available for Medicaid planning, and more. With offices located in Corporate Woods in Albany, West Harrison Street in Saratoga Springs, Executive Woods in Clifton Park, and Flatbush Road in Kingston, our attorneys are here to help you. If you'd like to schedule an appointment to speak with David, Jane Marie Harry, or Debbie, please call us during normal business hours, Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. To contact us at our Albany office, call 518-465-7581. Our Saratoga Springs office at 518-581-8131. Our Clifton Park office at 518-952-4010. And our Kingston office at 845-338-6405. Let the Herzog Law Firm help you navigate a plan that works for you and your family. Now back to the Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour with the Herzog Law Firm.
Hi, this is Debbie Verney.
I'm Kim Hance.
And I'm Joe Dean.
Hi, Joe. How are you?
Hi, good. How are you?
Good. So Kim and I are from the Herzog Law Firm, and we've got another half hour here of the show, and now we have Joe with us. So Joe, tell us a little bit about what's going on.
I'm glad to be here. Thanks so much for having me. I'm here to let you know a little bit about the Walk to End Alzheimer's. We're kicking off our first of 5 events that we hold in the northeastern New York region today at the Crossings of Colony. The Walk to End Alzheimer's is the largest fundraising event to raise not only funds but awareness for Alzheimer's and dementia care research. So it's a really awesome event that honors individuals from our community all over and really has a beautiful message to it. We have our beautiful promise garden ceremony in which we honor those individuals, and each flower that we have represents a different color. Every participant that comes is welcome to help themselves to one of our promise garden flowers. I can go over those colors in just a moment, but I want to make sure I let you know that this year we are having our events. All of our events are in person, and we will be following all CDC guidelines for COVID-19, including masking for those who are unvaccinated and anyone who obviously feels comfortable, more comfortable with a mask is obviously welcome to do so, and social distancing as well. So what questions do you have for me?
Well, I was going to say Lindsay's on the line now, too.
Oh, Lindsay's here.
Good morning, Lindsay.
Hi, how are you?
Good. How are you doing?
I'm good. Happy Walk Albany Walk Day.
Yeah, it's a great day.
Yeah. I'm wearing my purple in celebration, so you guys can't see. That's the unfortunate part of not being able to do this in person, right? Like, we can't actually see each other, but got my Walk to End Alzheimer's shirt on today just to celebrate and first walk of the season.
Yes, absolutely.
Sorry. Go ahead, Lynn. And that's the other disadvantage, right? We can't see each other, so we can't see
right.
each other.
So I'm a program manager for our Northeastern New York chapter. So our chapter itself covers 17 counties in New York State. So there's 6 program managers that are assigned to each of the counties that we serve. We are so grateful for the funds that are raised during the walk. We're able to provide care and support to those affected within the 17 counties that we serve. Myself, I cover Warren, Washington, and Hamilton counties. So I really have a huge focus on the Queensbury Walk, which is up here in the Glens Falls area. That walk will be on October 16th. I'm not sure if Joe's going to kind of touch base on the dates and different walks that we have within our chapter territory.
Yeah, sure will. This year we do have 5 walks. So as I said, our first walk today kicks off at 10 a.m. for registration, ceremony at 11 a.m. It is at the Crossings of Colony. That's our Albany walk. And then next weekend we will have our Schenectady walk at the Mohawk Harbor on the 2nd of October. I totally forgot and skipped over our Leatherstocking walk, which is awesome and so important to us. I apologize about that, but it is actually tomorrow out at Niwa Park in Oneonta. And then on the 16th, as Lindsay mentioned, we kick off our furthest north and our furthest south walks, our Queensbury walk at SUNY Adirondack, as well as our Columbia Green Walk down in Hudson at Columbia Green Community College. So we are covering all our bases, and we're all over the place in the fall. Happy to be there to support our community and celebrate everyone's wonderful efforts throughout the year to raise funds and awareness.
Right. So, Joe, can you explain to people sort of what they can expect during walk day? Like, I know there's going to be a lot of changes because, you know, usually a lot of times we all show up early so we can, you know, stand in line to register. And there are a lot of changes this year because of COVID. But so we can offer it in person, too. So what can people expect when they get there?
Yeah, so great question. So this year we've really modified and kind of streamlined the event. Whereas we would normally have a big registration room and all the exciting bells ringing, that will still be there, except we're all outdoors now. So all of our events are completely outdoors and all open air. That being said, our registration, we now have a QR code, which is mobile smartphone friendly. Really easy for you to just scan, allow your location, and you automatically get synced to the event that you're closest to and hopefully at. So it's a really easy way to get a quick registration in and then make donations. In addition to that, we've really got a lot of great text to donate, which I can go over in just a moment. But we have also modified, you know, things like our trial match, which I'm sure Lindsay could probably go in a little bit more detail about. The trial match matches people within 150-mile radius to the closest Alzheimer's research trials that we have going on. And it's a really great opportunity to take advantage and help us advance the science in what we do. So there's a lot of great opportunity there. In addition to that, we will be obviously encouraging the social distancing, and really we will, in our event, it is a little bit abbreviated this year, but still going to be just as impactful. And we're trying to make sure that if people are more comfortable, kind of ready to walk, and they don't want to stand in the crowd, we're happy to allow that. All of our sponsors and everything will be gloved and sanitized, have sanitizer and everything available. And we're only giving out prepackaged food this year. So unfortunately, we don't have our scooped ice cream and all that good stuff that everyone looks forward to, but I'm sure that it'll be just as beautiful as the day.
And you guys have a great day for the first walk. I mean, it couldn't be more perfect, right?
Yeah, I have to say, you know, our board chair, Kate Kennedy, Dr. Kate Kennedy always promises us about 70 degrees and a beautiful sunny day. And though we're not at Siena College, she has again nailed it. It's 72 and going to be sunny. We had a little fog this morning, but it's starting to melt off, and it's going to be a beautiful day, and it's a great day for our flowers to bloom, I guess.
Mm-hmm. That's awesome. So as a lot of people may know or may not know, I mean, so I co-chair the Adirondack Walk or Queensberry Walk, and you know, because it's always the middle of October, we always joke and, you know, right, Lindsay, that we can have, and we have had any number of weather events in our walks where it might start off a little, you know, snowing maybe a little bit and then burn off and have a nice sunny day. I don't know that we've ever been completely rained out. We certainly had, some days where the weather was a little challenging, but that's always the fun thing as we move further out and, you know, dealing with weather in the North Country. But hopefully Kate can promise us a nice 70 sunny degree day too.
I would love that.
I'll see if I can get her on top of that. Yeah, I like to put in my request early.
Right. A question about people who want to come to the walk, do they have to pay to register or anything like that? Are they required to?
Great question. Registration is completely free. We love to have people coming out and supporting our cause and seeing what we're about. You know, it's about learning a little bit about the journey for individuals and kind of why we support for some people. And then we obviously will always take a donation. You know, as a not-for-profit organization, we're the number three funder for Alzheimer's and dementia research. So it's really incredible to have that breadth of view in where to put funds as an organization. And it is absolutely fantastic to have those donations. So any amount, it could be pocket change, it could be $1 billion, that would make my day. But, you know, it's any amount, we will tip it off. Actually,
right.
This year, Ed, I have to mention, we have a really awesome one of our team captains. She really thinks things through, and I'm sure you know our friend Lori Gardner. This year, she was volunteering at a vaccination site and saw the opportunity to return water bottles. And she raised over $4,000 from that alone. So it was absolutely incredible.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
That's really great. I know that so Nicole Beery is one of the walk managers as well, and she emailed Bree. So Brianna, who's also chairs the Schenectady, well, Brianna chairing the Schenectady walk this year? I forget.
She is.
But we have a couple of
in both of our regions, both the Queensbury and Schenectady region, we have several people that do the clink, right? The bottle return through clink. Mm-hmm. And I think we've raised over $650 just with that. So just simple ways. I mean, I'd be returning bottles no matter what. So it's just another way to be able to, you know, push things towards fundraising, which is really great. So Lindsay,
do
tell me a little bit.
Do you want to explain what clink is?
So it's a prepaid bag that you drop off and you can designate for your returnables. So instead of taking them to the grocery store and plugging them into the machine, you just fill up your bag, you drop it off at one of the stations that you are generally at most of the grocery stores around. And you have a card that either comes to you so that you can use it towards your groceries, or you can designate an organization to be a receiver of the funds.
The clink bag itself actually comes with a barcode on it. So that barcode gets scanned when the bottles are being returned, and that way, Hannaford or wherever you're returning the bottles knows that those funds go to the Alzheimer's Association.
Right. So it's super easy, and you don't have to stand at the machine and getting the majority of your bottles rejected, which is what happens to me when I go. So Lindsay, tell our listeners, you know, from a walk perspective, yes, a lot of the funds that are raised, obviously, like Joe said, our organization is the third funder of research, but the walk also helps fund a lot of our local services, boots on the ground. So talk a little bit about what it is that you actually do as a program manager.
Yeah, a good chunk of the money that is raised at our walks stay local. Those funds stay local within our chapter to support caregivers and those that have an early diagnosis. A lot of what we do is educate caregivers, one-on-one disease education. We assist with long-term planning. If someone was to get a diagnosis, they don't know what to do, they turn to us, and we really just sit down for in-depth conversations, assess what the needs are, offer resources that may suit that specific caregiver's needs. We offer support groups. Support groups are a great place to listen and kind of gather ideas and thoughts on how to make your caregiving journey a little bit easier. We offer virtual education programs. They used to be in person, but due to the pandemic, we are still holding them virtually. Virtual education programs. We have a helpline. Our helpline is 24 hours a day, 7 days a week for caregivers who really just may be struggling and can't get in touch with their program manager. That number is 800-272-3900. It's just important to let caregivers know that they're not alone on this journey, and this is what we're here for. We raise funds at the walk, so we don't have to charge caregivers to meet with us. So, our services when we meet with caregivers and those that have a diagnosis are free to utilize because of fabulous events like our walk that assist in kind of funding these roles and these positions within our chapter.
So that's pretty amazing. It's pretty comprehensive as well. I mean, I know that so many people that we see that come into the firm and, maybe it's prompted them to do some planning because of the diagnosis. When we refer them to the association, a lot of times they don't really understand why they would need that. And once they start utilizing the programs and services, they're really the amount of support that's provided and education in particular is so important. Because one of the things that we always say is when you've seen one person with Alzheimer's or dementia, you've seen one person with Alzheimer's and dementia. You know, it presents in so many ways. So, you guys are the experts in all of the different kinds of you know, helping with different kinds of behaviors, or, you know, helping a caregiver sort of manage their stress.
Communication, yeah.
Right.
Effective communication strategies. Sure, yeah. So as I had said earlier, Kim, you know, I kind of want the listeners to understand if they're listening right now and they say to themselves, oh, geez, I really could use some education on behaviors or communication, or how do I get in touch with these folks? So I always suggest calling our helpline. I'll repeat that again. It's 800-272-3900. That way you could just say, I'd like to be put in contact with the local contact within, you know, whether it's Schenectady or Albany or Malta. And then we'll get a report that says, Kim called from Malta and she would like to speak with a local program manager. So, please, you know, feel free to reach out to the helpline. Feel free to sign up for a walk and, join us on one of those, fabulous days. We call walk, the world's greatest support group. It's a sea of purple and a lot of people just supporting each other and loving each other, you know, not feeling alone as they're on this journey.
Yeah, it's
wow,
really,
it sounds like you guys really do a lot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's one of the reasons why, you know, the firm is really committed to kind of supporting the association and the cause, because, you know, like I said, so many of our clients that we work with are dealing with this diagnosis and really don't know where to go. And it's amazing to see when they're able to make a connection with another family, you know, like you said, Lindsay, with the support groups, when they, you know, one of the support groups that we led pre-pandemic, they all became friends with one another, and they would go to lunch and they would go to Vermont for the day. And so it really became support, but also a social outlet, right? Because I think a lot of times people start feeling isolated as a caregiver because they're worried about bringing their loved one along to a function or to a dinner because they're worried about what might happen or what might be said. So the connections that are made for people are so important, and really to understand that you're not alone in this, and that there is a village out there that can help with care and support. And like you said, the research is so important because that's going to be the only way that we hopefully one day can be a world without Alzheimer's. And I know, Joe, you said you were going to talk about the different colors of the flowers. And a couple of years ago, we introduced a new color because there really is hope out there, isn't there?
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. I absolutely agree with you. I'll kind of start with you, the Lindsay and Kim, and you all said such, you put it in the perfect kind of light, how our event works. It's the world's largest support group. It is truly a community of individuals. You know, I started my journey after I lost my mother, and I was a purple flower holder. Our purple flower represents those who have lost someone to the disease, whether it's Alzheimer's or any related dementia. We have our yellow flower for the caregivers. Our orange flower is for advocates, those who may not have a personal connection to Alzheimer's disease or a related dementia, but support a world and a vision of a world without Alzheimer's and all of the dementia. And our blue flower is those who are affected with Alzheimer's or related dementia. And like you mentioned, Kim, a few years ago, we added our beautiful white flower, which it gets me every time at our ceremony, I have to say. It represents the vision of a world without Alzheimer's and all other dementia. And it is typically held by an adorable child dressed all in white, and it's really like the most hopeful image of our event. It's absolutely inspiring. I have to say, I'm there working with the script and figuring things out, and it gets me every time. Lindsay knows, but it's just a great, great event to be a part of. So if you do want to check things out, I will say you can go to alz.org/walk and type in your zip code, And there's a whole about page that gives a full explanation of where funds go. You can register for the event closest to you and join, or you can just make a donation. Those are all great ways to support. Or even better, come to our event and see what we're about. It's a great time. We've got live music. It's usually a DJ. I wouldn't say live music, but they're playing music, so that's fun. And it's really just a great celebration of everyone's efforts. You know, everyone's journey changes throughout this in such an impactful way. You know, I don't know that I'll do the story justice, but I will tell you, we've even seen our executive director has told us on several occasions one of my favorite stories about an individual whose flower color changed from year to year. You know. And it was two women in the bathroom, and they realized, you know, last year I was holding a yellow flower, and now I'm holding a purple flower, which signifies the loss of a loved one. And it's just moments like that that are the most impactful, and you see really why we do what we do, seeing how we can team together and really support each other as a community and build a better future for those who come after us. You know, it's building that world without Alzheimer's. It's a great cause, so happy to be a part of it.
Yeah, thanks guys. That's if people didn't know about what Walk and the association was before now, we definitely have. The other way you can join a team too is just by going to the Herzog Law webpage, because we have teams in all of the walks except for Oneonta, not to leave them out, but we don't go out that far, unfortunately. But and we're really trying to encourage people to join our teams as well. So there are lots of opportunities out there to participate and be a part of. Hopefully, like we always say, you know, we'd like to work ourselves out of a job one day. You know.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
So you guys, thank you so much. I know that with the walk today, there's lots going on. And I think Debbie's going to be heading. Are you headed down to the Albany walk today, Deb? I remember.
I'm not, actually. I have my team for the Schenectady walk next weekend. We have a bunch of people that are going to be walking. And if you'd like to join my team, like Kim said, you can go on our website at www.herzoglaw.com, and you can click on the link for the Alzheimer's Association, and you can sign up to be someone that walks with us. Or actually, I've had clients. It was really awesome. I got a notification that some of my clients have donated to the walk. And so you don't necessarily have to participate.
Aww.
You can just donate, and it's pretty exciting. And the Schenectady walk, I think the ceremony starts next Saturday at 10:30, and then the walk starts at 11:30. So I think it's going to be beautiful weather. I've already put my request in. So hopefully we'll have beautiful weather there and for all of the walks. But I think Jane Marie and two or three of the other people have teams that are at the walk in Albany today. Albany Latham, right?
Yeah. Okay, good.
Yeah. So I think they have Jane Marie and Stacy actually have teams down in Columbia Green as well. They're on the committee for Columbia Green. So, always exciting, but yeah.
That's great. So, we're gonna flood the lines with purple today, and I hope it's a big success and, you know, exciting. It's here, you know. We plan and talk about it all year, and then suddenly it's like, oh, gosh, we're here.
Here we are. Well, thank you so much for having us. It's greatly appreciated, Kim.
Yeah, thank you guys so much. And, you know, as always, we love working with you guys and supporting the cause and helping our clients. And, you know, just it's not an easy thing to deal with. So it's nice to know that there's help out there.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
You do.
All right. Well, you guys enjoy your day.
Thank you.
So you too.
You too.
Take care. You know, I almost want to say, like, go purple or something like that instead of, like, go orange for Syracuse. Go purple for Alzheimer's.
Yeah. Right. So that was one of the funny things, Deb. When you and I first met, I was actually working for the Alzheimer's Association, and
you always made a comment on you're always wearing purple. Which is very true, you know. It's the one color I own in my closet. Otherwise, everything else is black. We have a few minutes left, right? If anybody is wanting to call in or has a question or just to say hi, we've gone a full hour with nobody calling us. It makes me feel a little rejected.
Well, you know, you called in.
Well, that's true, right?
So yeah, I mean it's one of those days where it's a little overcast and people are like hanging out, have another cup of coffee, and I think that we had great information. That was great that they could join us from the Alzheimer's Association, because a lot of people aren't aware of the things that they offer, and the support that they give caregivers is just absolutely amazing, and a lot of people don't realize that it's out there.
Yeah, and, you know, that's one of the things that we really want people to understand, is that they're not alone, no matter what the journey is, right? And, you know, we're always here as a resource for folks, even if they're not a client. So really want people to understand that if they're really puzzled about something, they can always call our office. I do consultations, you know, you, Jamarie, Dave, Dan, like, we all offer consultations at no charge so that we can really try to help you guys get into the right place and where you need to be. And really that's a big part of our, you know, mission is to really to make a difference and to really help people understand that they are not alone.
Yeah, and that's the thing. You're not alone out there. And if you have documents, which we don't mention a lot, if you have documents and they're iffy or they're really old, give us a call. We can go over the documents with you. If you don't want to make a trip to the office, we can do it via phone. You can fax them over. So have a great weekend. Everybody get out and go to the walk. And hopefully you'll join us next Saturday.
All right. See you later.
Thank you for listening to the Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour with the Herzog Law Firm. For more information on their services, please visit herzoglaw.com. If you'd like to speak with one of their attorneys, please contact the Albany office at 518-465-7581, the Saratoga office at 518-581-8131, or their Kingston office at 845-338-6405.